Tonight on the Black Channel, we introduce you to quite possibly the last totally honest white woman in America. You know this is gonna be good. The Black Channel is live. Unapologetic, unadulterated, and absolutely uncompromising. Greetings, brothers and sisters from around the world, and welcome back to the home, the haven, the stronghold, and the everlasting superfortress of intelligent black thought. The voice of the black media. This is the BlackChannel.net radio program, and I am, of course, your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. Glad to be holding court with you all once again. And on tonight's program, I would like to introduce you all to Jean Kramer. She lives in a town called Marysville in Michigan. Not quite Mayberry, not quite Pleasantville. But she wanted to let you know that she's running for city council. And city council people are supposed to represent all of the constituency. Well, she's got a few ideas about what to do about that too. And her first idea is that everybody who's not white is automatically declared a problem. And this is where we begin our story with her. You're welcome to join us.
It's a nice city the way it is. We have meaning white.
If black people, if a black couple wants to move in, fine. But to have the mixed marriage, no.
Marysville is a small city in St. Clair County. 7 Action News reporter Kimberly Craig is there, where she talked to the candidate face to face. Kim?
Jean Kramer says she did not even know that her comments had gone viral, and she says she just didn't have enough time yesterday to explain what she meant.
My suggestion, recommendation, keep Marysville a white community as much as possible.
I was floored. I was speechless. I didn't know how to react to it. Nobody did it sitting at the table.
Why do you think Marysville should stay white?
We like it the way it is.
This is 68-year-old Jean Kramer, who is running for city council in Marysville, and we're told she stunned everyone at the Meet the Candidates forum in City Hall last night when she said they should keep Marysville white. Here she is responding to the audible gasp in the room.
Seriously, in other words, foreign-born, no foreign people.
If people are coming here to get away from their own country, what they should do is go back to their own country and straighten it out.
Kramer claims she's not racist. Now listen to what she says about a new couple in the neighborhood. One is American and the spouse is Canadian.
And they're both white.
So that's okay.
Yeah.
But she's foreign.
Right.
I don't know if Canadian would be foreign.
The simple fact is that people here in Marysville, or even in Port Huron, the majority of people just feel that was a real ignorant statement to make, and we don't believe that, we don't feel that way. And so to have something like that overshadow such a positive event here in Marysville, like Hot Wheels Weekend, is really kind of sad.
I have no problems with black people. As long as people marry the same kind, I have no problem.
First of all, claiming that the problem this introduces is interrupting Hot Wheels Weekend. That tells you a lot. But the other thing I would say is that based upon our experience as black people, you gotta hand it to her. I mean, at least she's willing to be honest. The rest of them are up there pretending like they don't really agree with her. Do you understand that? The rest of them are pretending that they don't agree with her. And that's the way the game is played. You have the ones who support what she's saying, but say you can't say it out loud. Then you have ones like her who say, what the hell? Why are we being coy? And I have to tell you all right now, what I'm about to say is going to shock a bunch of black people. I can appreciate an honest white supremacist. I don't have a problem with an honest white supremacist. You don't like me, and I don't like you, and you can actually get something done with somebody that you don't have to pretend things around. You see, black folk have grown accustomed to the idea of the complete, you know, refutation of one of the parables that Jesus had in the Bible, where he asked the Sanhedrin, the Sadducees, and the Pharisees. Once a father asked two of his sons to do something for him. He asked the first son. The first son said, yes, I will do it, father, but then never got to go around to go do it. The second son told his father, no, you old windbag, I'm not doing anything. But then later he went to go do it. And Jesus asked the Sadducees and Pharisees, which one of these sons has honored his father? Well, they said the one who told his father that he would do it because he was polite. And that's where we are as black folk. We prefer that people be polite white supremacists. And our idea of polite is to lie to us. We want people to be dishonest white supremacists. And so then you end up voting for the Hillary Clintons and the Joe Bidens and the Kamala Harrises. Oh, yes, I included her. And the Bernie Sanders, because we want our whites, we think that that's dominance. That if we can get them, that if they are trying to deceive us, that that's dominance. Now, don't get me wrong, you lie to people that you are afraid of. But deception as an art of warfare is different. And black people demand that our adversaries lie to us. We demand that they lie to our faces because that makes us comfortable, because we think that we're wearing them down. We think that we've actually dominated them if we can get them to lie to us. We think we've actually dominated them. And that's not the way it works. Because it's not the white supremacists who are afraid when black people demand to be lied to. As black people, you are the ones who are afraid when you demand that they lie to you. You're the one who's scared. You're the one who's worried. You see, when you're honest about it, power respects power. Power does not respect weakness. Power does not invite weakness. Power respects power. And as black people, we have attempted to avoid this and evade this. Understood, let there be no doubt about this. Power respects power. Louis Farrakhan is respected. He is respected in white society. I talked to Jared Taylor. He's respected. The only thing that they have any qualms about is that he hasn't gone further. When the Saudis dropped airplanes on New York City, they were respected. You see, you are dealing with the European colonial mindset. The European colonial mindset makes it very clear that they respect that which they cannot conquer. They respect that which they cannot conquer. Black people are not accustomed to that. We're not accustomed to the idea that we can gain respect by showing people that they cannot dominate us and cannot conquer us. That's the problem. We're not accustomed to the idea that we need to put people in their place and that that is what will gain us their goodwill. We've told ourselves that bowing and scraping and kissing ass, that that's going to gain goodwill. And that's not how you gain people's respect or gain their goodwill. You gain their respect by demonstrating to them that you have something of value. And when you can't be bullied, and you can't be intimidated, and you can't be harassed, and you can't be victimized, you have power. And power is of value. Power is of value. And we've been taught that we don't need to have power because that threatens people. And we've been taught as black people that the worst thing that we can be is threatening. That we have an obligation to make sure that people feel totally comfortable in our presence. That's a damn lie. They are threatened merely by your existence. Your very existence is what threatens them. Your very existence is what bothers them. Your very existence is what makes them violent and is what makes them harmful and abusive. Just your very existence. Your very existence is what is bothering them. So instead of us seeking people to be deceptive to us, because in reality we're trying to deceive ourselves, because we tell ourselves that if people tell us that they like us, then they really do, that their words matter more than their actions. That's cowardice. Their words do not matter more than their actions. Their actions matter much more than their words. It's better to have somebody who says they hate you and never come around you than to have somebody who says they love you and they're showing up at your house, sabotaging your car, sabotaging your home, sabotaging your children. It's better to have the person who says that they hate you and never shows up. That's what we need to be focusing on. The other problem is that we're missing the elephant sitting in the room. People, the world is living on prison politics. Do you understand that? The world is operating on prison politics. And I guess I could say specifically California prison politics. In California, the prisons are divided up by race. But I shouldn't say divided up by race. They are divided up as black and everybody else. And most prisons in America operate the same way. California is the most notorious. You have the black inmates, and then you have everybody else. And that's how the world works. The world is operating under California prison politics. And black people are the clowns on the yard running up to all the other races, violating all the politics and pretending that somehow we are not beholden to them. That if we just keep running in their space, we're going to break down their desire to harm us. The world is operating under prison politics when it comes to race. And black folk have been acting like we can bully the world into denying its nature, into denying its politics. We didn't set that up. The black guerrilla family didn't go into California prisons and demand that things be separated by race. We didn't do that. The white inmates did that. And the white prison did that. And then all the other groups joined in with them because there was power to be had by emulating the white supremacists. And I'm just telling you right now, everywhere you go in America as a black person, you are living under prison politics. Everywhere. So you have, now even in prison, you might have on the low, it's never overt, but on the low, you might have some commerce that takes place, assuming it is approved by, you know, higher up, shot callers or whatever at the prison, assuming it's higher up, you might have some interracial business dealings, drugs, cell phones, etc. But as far as those are exceptions to the rule. If you have something that one of the other groups doesn't have, they might make an exception in this instance where it comes to dealing with your black ass. But other than that, as the course of daily events, there are no exceptions. This is the rule. The rule is white supremacy. This is the rule. No debating, no asking questions. This is the rule. And I want to ask you a question as black people. Are you prepared to be honest enough with yourself to accept and to acknowledge that you are living under prison politics, and that instead of trying to deny that you are in the prison and attempting to deny that you are living under prison politics and the rules of prison politics, that you just accept it for what it is? That this is what it is. This is the prison. This is the prison yard. This is the cell block. This is what it is. There is no special housing unit. All your coons and mammies and bedwinches and sellouts, everybody's trying to figure out some way to get themselves into some sort of protective custody. There is no protective custody. There are just those of you who acknowledge that you're in the crosshairs and those who don't. And it's just that simple. It's just that easy. It's just that easy. The society is the prison. The world is the prison. Do you acknowledge and accept that you are in the prison? Because when you do, then a white supremacist talking like a white supremacist doesn't scare you, because you've already made the mental adjustment of where you are. You're not living under any delusion. Understand something. The people who are scared are the people who don't have a plan. They don't have the guts and they don't have the courage to be able to exist in the environment. But when you acknowledge that you are in the prison, then you stop looking for the other groups in the prison to act differently. The society is the prison. I'm not mad at Gene Kramer. As a matter of fact, I told you all this before. Richard Spencer. I respect Richard Spencer. I didn't say what he's saying is right. I didn't say what he's saying is correct. But Richard Spencer is not sitting up here pretending to be something he isn't. I can respect him. Joe Biden, I can't respect you. Bernie Sanders, I can't respect you. I can respect Donald Trump. He's not pretending to be something he isn't. He's a bit of a goofball, but he is clearly and unapologetically a white nationalist. I can respect him. You see, black people don't have an idea of that because they're not used to winning. Do you know why Floyd Mayweather is perhaps the greatest boxer of all time? Because every single time he's walked into that ring, he has respected every single opponent that he got in there with. Madonna, Pacquiao, Conor McGregor. He has respected every single one of them and respected their abilities. He has acknowledged what it is that they are able to do. He has respected who they are. He's respected that. And that's why he's been able to beat them. He doesn't go in there telling himself that he's the best. He goes in there acknowledging the weapons and the capabilities that these opponents have. And he is honest with himself about what they are capable of. We want white folk to lie to us and tell us that they are not capable of white supremacy. And then they turn around and do a Daniel Pantaleo on you. We want them to lie to us. We want them to deceive us and tell us that they're not about that life. So when a Jean Cramer speaks, black folk get angry. You know why? Because we are playing along with the dominant society. We're playing along. And that's going to upset a lot of folk, but I want to get deep into that here for a moment. Before I do, of course, as always, I want to thank everybody who's contributed to tonight's program in the Streamlabs and the Super Chat, both live and recorded. Thank you very much for doing so about that. And if you have not hit the subscribe button and the notification bell, go ahead and make sure you do that now. But thank you to everybody who's contributed to tonight's program here. White society, as you all know, created this game where if they don't say white supremacy exists, then you don't accuse them of white supremacy. And that is the unspoken pact between black society and white supremacy. That if they pretend it's not there, and if they pretend that it's forbidden, then we play along and pretend that every time we see an act of white supremacy, we will say, oh, that's a fluke. Oh, that's a fluke too. Ooh, that over there, that's a fluke too. And that last one, that's a fluke too now. And everything becomes, oh, that's a fluke. Oh, that's not real either. Those are flukes too. That's what we keep doing. That's what we keep doing. We keep playing along with it. If they are willing to play along and say that white supremacy doesn't exist, then we are willing to play along and say, yeah, and every time we see white supremacy every day, that's a fluke. That's an exception. We play along with it. And I'm here to tell you, I'm not going to play along with anybody. I don't want to play along with anyone. And I'm not going to play along with anyone. I'm not going to demand to be lied to. I'm not going to demand to be lied to, and I'm not going to demand to have somebody lying to my face. Come straight up the damn middle with it. Come straight up the damn middle. Black folk are afraid for them to come up the middle because you're afraid of what it really means or what she's saying. When a white person speaks like Jean Cramer, and let's just be clear about what she's saying, what's going to trigger a lot of black folk and particularly black males out there up in that Michigan area, she's telling you as a white female, elderly and decrepit as she may be, she is telling you that she is not interested in allowing you interracial sexual access. Now there's where the real offense, can we just be honest? There's where the real offense comes in. She is a white woman who is publicly declaring that she is against giving black people, and specifically black males, interracial sexual access. Now that's a problem. Because you see, among too many black males today, interracial sexual access is a substitute for actually building. Being able to get some cast-off trailer chick in bed is a substitute for actually building something. In their minds. In their minds, it's a substitute. Telling yourself that. Now, let's be very, very clear here. Let's be very, very clear. I'm not talking about her specifically. Keep up with us here. She is a representative of white female society. You can't dispute that. She is a representative of white female society. Even in the video clip that was played earlier, where the mayor pro tem was a female, I think she said that her father was Syrian. So this woman, Jean Kramer, she represents white womanhood. You got to accept that. She represents white womanhood. She is speaking for white women. Let's be very, very clear about that. She is the elder spokesperson for the white female. You're going to have to accept that. You're going to have to accept that. You don't live with these young white women. You're the ones younger than her. You don't live with them. You have no connection to their society. You have no connection to their dinner table, except in some whacked out, crazy, drug-induced fantasy in your own head. You don't have any connection to her society. She is the mother of white women. She is the grandmother among white women. She is their auntie. She is a member of the oppressor class. She is a member of the group. Period. She speaks on behalf of white women. She speaks on behalf of white women. And when she says that she is not in favor of interracial dating, she is speaking on behalf of white womanhood. And that's the real thing that's going to upset a lot of black folk, and particularly a lot of black males out there. You are very, very much offended at the fact of a white woman openly saying that that's not what she's, that she is against that. That there will be no, in her words, there will be no more interracial sexual access. That's a problem. That's a problem. That's going to be a difficulty. And the reason that that's going to be a difficulty is because she understands there's not, she's not threatened by saying that. Understand who she singled out. She singled out black people. There's a reason why she singled out black people. We heard what she said there when they asked her. She said that she, if you're a foreign person, if you're foreign, remember that? If you're foreign. Well, she says, if you're foreign. But then they reminded her, well, you know, there's a Canadian woman who just moved in your neighborhood. Oh, well, she's white. So what did she just tell you? She told you that her that foreign is a code word. Did you all get that? She's just coming out and saying what these other people are saying behind closed doors. She's just saying what these other folk are saying behind closed doors. When she said foreign, she meant black. She didn't mean Asian. She didn't mean Middle Eastern. She damn sure didn't mean Caucasian. She meant black. Foreign is code for black. Muslim is code for black. Middle Eastern is code for black. Immigrant is code for black. Check what she did there. Check what she said. She said what she meant, and she meant it how she said it. When they confronted her about, wait a minute, there's a Canadian lives down the street from you. She's foreign. Oh, yeah, but she's white. And I gotta tell you, I can respect that. This is odd. I gotta tell you, I can respect that. People, I guess I'm just cut differently because there is no part of me that seeks to be deceived. There is no part of me that is desperate to be accepted by the oppressor class. I don't look for a neighborhood of white supremacists and try to figure out some way to get them to like me. That's not the way I live, and that's not who I am. That's not where I live. And I'm not worried about that. That doesn't worry me, and that doesn't bother me. I'm not threatened by it. I'm not hurt by it. I'm not bothered by it. I don't have any problem whatsoever not being loved by them because I am not looking to be loved by them. And as black people, you got to understand, white folk know that when they say they don't like you, that breaks black people's souls. It really does. When black people hear that we've been rejected by white society, that breaks the average Negro's soul. Because a part of your being and your self-worth is wrapped up in that. And it's only when you stop doing that and you start looking to other black people for your love and affection and acceptance and validation, all of a sudden these other people don't bother you. I understand that she is not an outlier, and I also understand that she is not going against the grain, except for the fact that she's blowing everybody's cover. See, she's making the block hot for everybody else because by her coming out and openly saying, y'all got to understand, confusion is a weapon. Let me be clear with you here. Confusion is a weapon. And by her coming out and openly saying that she's a white supremacist and she wants to keep other races at bay, she's forcing the other white candidates for city council to have to condemn what she's saying and speak as if they don't agree with her and they're against it. And this confuses the electorate because the electorate wants someone who's going to protect their white privilege. And now they're not, they don't want someone who's going to be so blatant that they bring up too much, that they're too abrasive and will cause too much resistance. But at the same time, she's the one that they want. So they want to go for a candidate who knows to speak in code. But if the others have to come out and condemn her, it makes it impossible to be certain whether the other candidates are just saying it because you have to condemn it to stay on code, or whether the other candidates are saying it because they actually mean it. Do you get the problem that this poses for the white supremacist electorate? When you've got someone who comes out and says is straight up the middle and is open about it, and then you got somebody else who has to sit up here and soft shoe around it, they're not sure. They're not sure. They aren't certain. So now they don't know which candidates 100% to stand behind and which ones not to. They're not sure. They're not sure. So this causes a problem when she comes out and says that. This causes a bit of a train wreck because the rest of the electorate is not sure who to stand behind now. They want to stand behind her, but she's a little too blatant. And now the others have got to figure out how to disagree with her, but at the same time, make it clear that they don't disagree with what she's saying. The others have to make it clear that they are not with her, but they agree with her. Yeah, we don't stand behind her, but we stand behind the intent of what she's saying. So you see how they have to thread this needle so carefully. This is what makes white supremacy hard to practice. This makes white supremacy difficult to practice. How can you practice white supremacy properly when this is going on? How do you do that? How do you practice it properly when those who say it outright, everybody's got to jump on them, and then everybody's got to figure out who's speaking the most hardline code speak because everybody had to come back and say they don't agree with her, even though they really do. Now, the census says that this area of Marysville, Michigan, is 95% white. This area where she lives is 95% white. 95. That is not a little amount. 95% white is a very good amount. Oh yeah, it's 95% white and about 1% black. 95% white, 1% black. People, we're a non-factor. We are a non-factor. There may be some people up there who are looking at higher public office, because when you look at Michigan as an entire state, in certain cities in Michigan, you can overlook the black vote altogether. But the black population of the state of Michigan is significant. And if you want to run for statewide office in Michigan, the black vote can get you there or can keep you out. That black vote in the state of Michigan gets you there and keep you out. So if you have aspirations to higher office in Michigan, you gotta play your cards right. Now, she doesn't have any higher aspirations. Remember I was talking to you all last night about courage? Well, I gotta tell you, I mean, you're gonna be upset about this, but do you understand? This woman's an exercise in courage. She's an elderly white woman. She's got more days behind her than she does in front of her. And at this point, she is saying, you know what? Screw it. I gotta look out for the next generation. I have to look out for what is in their best interests. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to look out for what's in their best interests, not what's in mine. I'm looking out for them. I'm looking out for them. It doesn't matter what it costs me. It doesn't matter what I lose. It doesn't matter what I sacrifice. Brothers and sisters, she's like Kaepernick to the third level, to the third power. She is leaving it all on the field. She's leaving it all on the field. She's not making any bones about it. And I have to say this straight out. If we had a congressional black caucus, oh yes, I'm saying it. If we had black political representation that at the very least behind closed doors talk like this, we would actually have an economic base and societal standing. We don't even have black representation that talks like this behind closed doors. Not even to black people. They show up at historically black colleges and universities and tell you how we gotta look out for gays and illegals. Black politicians do not even speak to the black constituency in the way that this white woman is speaking to the entire nation. And if we had black political representation that was like this, things would be different. Things would be different. This is something for us to keep in mind. These are hard truths for you to understand here, but when you are all the way down, then this is the way you're going to talk. People, when you are all the way down and you know that it's about what you're leaving behind, let me just be honest with you. This is the way that it's going to go. This is the way you're going to talk. Someone tell me the last time that you heard Al Sharpton speak anything close like this. How about Mark Morial, Jonathan Capehart, Michael Eric Dyson. Need I go on? When was the last time that your so-called black spokespeople, black representation, your affluent Negroes who can afford to say it, when's the last time that they spoke like this? This is something I want you to think about. This is something I want you to think about. She is looking out for the next generation, even if it costs her everything. Even if it costs her everything, she is willing to do whatever it takes to look out for the next generation. Even if she loses it all. Tell me, where are the elders in black society who speak like this? I'm asking an honest question. The HBCUs have produced leaders for decades. Do it all 1911. What useful leaders have the HBCUs produced for black society in the last 30 years? In the last 40 years, who are the useful leaders that have been produced through the historically black colleges and universities? Let me know, what in the world are you talking about? This is more of this delusional make-believe talk. This is more of that church talk. You're treating the HBCU like it's a religion. HBCUs are not a religion. What are you talking about? Which HBCU are you referring to? The HBCUs are the bootlicks and servants of the dominant society. Someone tell me, anybody in the chat room know what in the hell he's talking about? They produce leaders, HBCUs. Which HBCUs are you referring to? If the HBCUs were actually producing anything useful, they would have shut them down decades ago. They wouldn't be making federal programs that steer dollars into them. People, if the HBCUs were actually producing black people who were a threat to the system, they would have shut them down decades ago. HBCUs produce educated black professionals. Brother, that's not saying nothing. What does that word even mean? Educated black professionals like who? I asked you who. If you can't say who it is and what they're doing, then you're just making it up. This is what Negroes do when Negroes don't actually have a point to make. They start delving off into make-believe. They produce black professionals. Who? Like Tarana Burke? Like Melissa Harris Perry, like Michael Eric Dyson, like Kamala Harris. Every time we turn around, Negroes are trying to figure out some way to defend an obsolete and failed institution. Oh, we have institutions in black society, but pretty much all of them are failures. And we're sitting up here trying to defend failed institutions. Well, they mean wells. And then you wonder why you can't win a war. This isn't about your delusional hope for what HBCUs could one day become. This is about what they actually are. And HBCUs are the weapons used against us. That's the reason that the federal government funnels money off into them. Because the HBCUs, if they were actually producing for black people, they'd have cut off the funding decades ago. Decades ago, they would have done this. Black folk want to be in denial because having to accept the reality means you got to do something about it. Brothers and sisters, I'm willing to sacrifice the HBCUs. Gasp. If the HBCUs do not serve us, then I am willing to sacrifice them. I'm willing to let them go. I'm not going to sit here and let some politician tell me, vote for me. I'm going to keep money going to the HBCUs. If the HBCUs do not serve our interests, that's why I tell Bernie Sanders and the rest of them, you can't get my support talking about HBCUs. What else do you have? I'm willing to sacrifice the HBCUs. I'm willing to sacrifice them. Not going to hurt myself to keep them around. I'm willing to sacrifice them. I'm willing to let them go. And you're not going to be able to hold them hostage and say, you better sit up here and support me. You better sit up here and support me. I'm going to defend the HBCUs. That's not going to get you support from me. That's not going to get my support. So if you think you're going to hold the HBCUs hostage, and that's somehow going to bully me into supporting you, you're dead ass wrong. That's not going to do it. It's not going to do it. So no, brothers and sisters, you got to be willing to sacrifice. You got to be willing to sacrifice. Does this mean that the HBCUs are all bad? That they are 100% bad? No. But by definition, there are very few things that are 100% bad. So the standard can't be 100%. The question is, are the HBCUs more useful than they are useless? That's the question. Can someone tell me by name the HBCU that is more useful than it is useless? Someone name for me the HBCU by name that you can point to and say, Jason, this HBCU is not perfect, but it does more good than it does being useless. Simple question. And then you're going to have to explain to us why it is that we're not seeing it. When something is useful, your enemies attack it. When something is empowering you, your enemies... You all can't sit up here and say that we couldn't build another Black Wall Street because the white supremacists would attack it. Why? Because the Black Wall Street would actually be empowering us, and then say, but they're not attacking the HBCUs, and those empower us also. You can't say that. You can't say that Black Wall Street would never fly because it would make us too powerful, and then say the HBCUs are making us too powerful, but the white supremacists are leaving those alone. It doesn't work that way. This is simple logic. This is simple deduction. This is simple deduction. If you had a thriving medical program coming out of Howard, then they wouldn't be sitting up. Gentrification wouldn't be happening. Howard would be the one gentrifying. Just like Columbia is the one gentrifying. Just like UCLA is the one gentrifying. Just like Yale is the one gentrifying. Howard would be the one gentrifying if their medical program was so on point. Let's stop sitting up here deluding ourselves. Let's stop deluding ourselves. In Black society, what you have are these indoctrination centers that get Negroes to try to figure out who can compete to be the best trained, to be the next first Negro. And do you all realize that at this point, at this day and age, you've gone through everything. You've had a semi-Black president of the United States, and Black folk are still running around talking about being the first Black borough president of Yonkers, the first Black mayor of Miami or whatever. You see, that becomes something that you chase for time in memoriam. accolades, trophies, titles, plaques, names, when you should be chasing empowerment. Empowerment doesn't come with a plaque. It doesn't come with a parade. It doesn't come with someone pinning a medal to you. Empowerment is quiet. Empowerment is silent. Empowerment is effective. Empowerment gets no attention. Empowerment is unsung. It just gets the job done. Now I want to tell you something that's really going to scare you here. The Gene Kramers are plentiful. They get together at their little bingo games. They get together at their little knitting needle sessions. They talk to their daughters. She's in her 60s, so she may have daughters in their 40s or 30s. And then they're talking to their daughters in their 20s or their teens. And then you're going to have some dumb wannabe bedbug jackass sit up here and tell you that if he's able to bed one of this woman's daughters or granddaughters, then that's a win. Can we just keep it real? You'll have some brain dead jackass out there who will sit up here and tell himself that if he is able to bed one of her daughters, then he has defeated white supremacy, then he has confused this woman's family. This is how stupid it gets over here. Brothers and sisters, after listening to Meemaw, Grandmeemaw, sit up here and say this crap and give them a lifelong diet of it, her daughters and granddaughters could get run through by the damn football team. And when they come of age and it is time to enter the society and become a mature, productive member, they are gonna hop out of the bed with P. Diddy or 50 Cent or whoever, and they are gonna get up and practice white supremacy. They are not confused. They're not confused about who they are and what they are. They're not confused. And no amount of desire, ass kissing, ass chasing, skirt chasing, desperation, you're not going to confuse her bloodline. Her bloodline is not confused. They're not confused at all. Yeah, Miley Cyrus, did she get confused? Katy Perry, did she get confused? Pink, not going to necessarily say white supremacist, I just will say after she slept with a bunch of black men to get her record deal, from the street level to the boardroom, she slept with a bunch of black men to get on. And as soon as she got solidified, who did she marry? Not throwing shade, I'm just saying, let us remember the history as it actually happened. When Pink needed to get put on, she slept with black men. After she got put on, that was it. Yes, Katy Perry, J-Lo, it's the same sad story. As black people, we sit up here and tell ourselves that just because we get confused by interracial sexual contact, that everybody else is equally confused. Therefore, we have reached equality, because even if everybody's not equally smart, they are equally confused. And that's not true at all. That's not true at all. They are not confused. Sexual contact for them is a power dynamic in a way that it will never be for black people. When you chase interracial sexual access with a white supremacist female, She walks away empowered. Take a look at, you say Miley Cyrus, I would take you even further. Take a look at Billy Ray Cyrus, a man who had no business whatsoever, and yet, and I don't want to throw aspersions, cast aspersions, because we're not really sure what was or wasn't going on with Lil Nas X. But what I will say is that when Billy Ray Cyrus needed a shot of adrenaline in his career, there Lil Nas X was. Meanwhile, you all can't show me anybody who they put a shot of adrenaline in their arm. You can't get your career revitalized. You can get interracial sexual access. You don't get any of the power that comes along with it. You don't get any of the power that comes along with it. That's my point. And what she's talking about is how to protect their power. She's talking about how to protect their power. I also want to remind you, she's willing to go down with the ship. She's willing to go down with the ship. She's willing to die on this hill. You do get that. She is willing to die on this hill. She's willing to leave it all here, and she's willing to die on this hill. That's important. That's important to know. She is willing to die on this hill. She's willing to give it all up and leave it all here. She is willing to do that. That's something that most black folk are simply unwilling to even discuss. Not even willing to discuss, by the way, what are we willing to sacrifice? What are we willing to give up and just leave here? Because that takes a lot. That takes a whole lot to walk into a situation and say, you know what, I'm going to walk out with less than I walked in with so that the future will have what I had or more. Yeah, you jumped a little bit ahead of me, but in black society, where are our elder warriors? Oh, I'm sorry. Am I making you uncomfortable by reminding you of that? Where are our elder warriors in black society? Where are our elder warriors to say, you know what, before I go down, I want to make sure that I say it exactly the way I mean it. Where are ours? Okay, call her what you want to. Say she's a little old crazy white lady running for the city council in Marysville. Okay, fine, no problem, fine. Where are our little old crazy black folk running for city council at the HBCU, whatever, where are they at? Where is the black counterpart to this to say, you know what, if she's going to say that, then for the sake of the next black generation, we say this over here. Where are they? Off in church? I went by Creflo Dollar's World Changer Ministries in Atlanta a few weeks back. I went by there on a Sunday morning. Negroes were lined up in their cars. The police were out there directing traffic on that side street where you turn in to go to the church. They were coming from around the corner. Ironically enough, there was some drunk Negro who was literally standing by the side of his Chrysler 300 right around the corner, relieving himself on the sidewalk. This woman is saying, I'm going to bring white empowerment to the city council. Black folk are saying, we're going to bring black empowerment to the church, where it doesn't affect anything. That's what I'm trying to tell you. You can't defeat someone who is willing to sacrifice everything when you are willing to sacrifice nothing. You can't defeat someone who is willing to sacrifice everything if you are willing to sacrifice nothing. So I respect her. I do. I respect her a hell of a lot more than I do the Congressional Black Caucus. A hell of a lot more than I do our black politicians. This is a white woman who's willing to stand up for white people. My only regret is, where's ours? But I don't begrudge her anything. She's doing what she's supposed to do. She is doing what she is supposed to do for white supremacist society, and we are supposed to do what we are supposed to do. But there isn't supposed to be some part of us that is worried or afraid. That's not the case, and that's not the point. Too many black folk are sitting up here confused. And that's something that needs to stop. But if you're listening here tonight, you need to listen to this with new ears. Stop seeking for people to lie to you. Stop seeking deception. I want you to start demanding, expecting, and respecting an honest battlefield. Because the real reason that you want white supremacy to lie to you is because you don't want to have to fight. You want to say there ain't no war going on. There's no problem. See, everybody likes us. This woman is an outlier. She's the exception to the rule. She doesn't speak for everybody. She doesn't speak for most of them. That's what she wants to say. And I'm telling you, that's a lie. She does. And you know what? That's okay. It is okay that she speaks for the majority of them. You should take that as your incentive and your encouragement to speak for the majority of your people and to be unapologetic, unadulterated, and uncompromising. I wish they all talked like she does. More would get done. And fewer black folk would be able to lie to themselves. If you haven't been to our website, blackchannelfilms.com, that's blackchannelfilms.com. You definitely want to go there and check out our documentary work, 7 a.m., Gentrified, Ethnic Cleansing American Style, and our newest documentary, Race War, now available live and on streaming live and on DVD. And if you have not clicked the subscribe button and the notification bell, go ahead and do that. If this is your first time here, welcome to the Haven of Intelligent Black Thought. We are the Black Channel. As you can hear, we give the insight and analysis you get nowhere else. There is a reason why the establishment fears us. There is a reason why the intelligentsia loves us. Every weekend we do this, you are more than welcome to join us. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio program. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, my brothers and my sisters from around the world, remember, black is the future, and the future is honest.